Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel, Russ Dellinger, and SI's Pat Forte. Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. It's the quiet summer weekend here, gentlemen. We have a hazing scandal and bureaucratic mismanagement situation at Northwestern. Didn't see Northwestern football popping up on our schedule. And we got Huggins claiming he didn't actually quit.
Costanza.
It's literally an episode of Seinfeld. Costanza comes back and says he didn't quit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they fire
Oh, that? Oh, that? Oh, no.
He's going to be like that guy Milton in Office Space, that movie where they just, with his stapler, they're going to move his desk to like the basement, the boiler room of West Virginia Coliseum. Huggs keeps showing up at work. Well, just move his desk down the basement. Get it out of the basketball.
The best way to get Huggins out and keep him out is to move his mini bar out.
Oh, geez. Well, there is a bar in his office, I guess. I think he's taking treatment, Pat. I do think he's undergoing, alluded to treatment, which we're hoping works. Yeah. And we'll take seriously. We'll get to that. This is one of the craziest stories. You weren't expecting that resignation. Letter that wasn't really a resignation. I don't know what Huggins is up to. We'll get to the bottom of that one. But Northwestern football is under the spotlight here. So I'm going to try to recap for those of you who weren't paying attention. And that was Northwestern's clear goal by releasing the news on a summer Friday news dump. They thought they were clever, not nearly clever. Whoever their crisis management team is, could be sued for malpractice. This is a botch of all botches. Made the story everything worse. I am still going to one day open the college sports crisis management division because all the ones you guys hire suck.
Terrible.
Like the president of Northwestern may end up losing his career over this.
Yeah.
Something he didn't even do, like he didn't have anything.
Yeah.
Imagine administer it. Yeah, imagine building your career all the way to Northwestern and then being taken down by this. But anyway, we'll get to that failure. So Northwestern on Friday releases news that they had received a complaint from an anonymous email alleging hazing in the football program last November 30th. They do the right thing. They immediately hire a law firm to investigate the situation. And they publicly disclosed that there was an investigation going on in January. I think most people didn't really pay any attention to that. Whatever. They interviewed 50 people who are either with the program, former with the program. They went through emails and texts and player surveys. They tried to find out whatever they could. And they came out and released. They came up with this report. But Northwestern did not release the full report. As a private school, it can do that. If this was a public school, it would be a public document, and they would probably be forced to release the report or be available to the public. Instead, they tried to hide the report, and they put out an executive summary for everybody, and it contains virtually no details of anything. There were two main conclusions. Current and former players varied on their perspective of the conduct. However, the investigation team determined the complainant's claims were largely supported by evidence gathered during the investigation, including separate and consistent first-person accounts from current and former players. While the investigation did not uncover evidence pointing to specific misconduct by any individual football player or coach, participation in or knowledge of the hazing activities were widespread across football players. This line was very peculiar. We found out something happened, but we don't know who did it. We don't want to say who did it. And then the investigative team did not discover sufficient evidence to believe that the coaching staff knew about the ongoing hazing conduct. They determined, however, that there had been significant opportunity to discover and report the hazing conduct. By who? The coaching staff? The way this is written is like, it's not red flags, it's fireworks. Okay? So you immediately go, wait, what? So we found out something happened, but we don't know who did it. And we found out that they didn't know, but then they had a lot of opportunities to find out. Anyway, that's their investigation. There's no details of what this thing was. There were hazing activities at Camp Kenosha, training camps. There was some different stuff, whatever. No details. They suspend Pat Fitzgerald, their former legendary player and highly successful coach by Northwestern standards. 2 weeks, no pay. And then they come up with a bunch of other stuff that doesn't matter. No more Camp Kenosha, and there'll be some, you know, educational opportunities. So that's where they were at. This is Northwestern trying to thread the needle to me, a needle that was not, and then hope everyone went to the lake and forgot. It's important. We found stuff, but we didn't really find anything. Nobody did anything wrong. Coach Fitzgerald did anything wrong, but he's out for 2 weeks. But that was it. Now, the problem is there's no details. They should have released the full report and people could really look at what the story was. They did not. They hoped it would go quiet. That was stupid. By Saturday, the Daily Northwestern, student newspaper at Northwestern, had a story. Nicole Marcus, Alice Brown, Cole Reynolds, and Divya Bardwaj, I'm hoping. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. Good work. Got a former Northwestern player. We believe that this is the complainant who detailed, with anonymity, the various actions of the alleged hazing. And it was deemed really abrasive and barbaric culture. According to this guy, there is a second player who confirmed these details. So this is the story. And we can get to all the details. I don't want to just drone on for 10 minutes here. Just trying to get to the thing. This was kerosene on the story, and this was inevitably going to come out somewhere. Then they're talking to ESPN, and then the president's now on the phone with the complainant. Then the president releases a statement Saturday night saying, well, maybe I erred and going too light and on Coach Fitzgerald. So now he's wavering. That leads to a statement that comes from, quote, the entire football team. Maybe it was the entire maybe part. I don't know. That said, we didn't do anything. And this is exaggerated. I think was the language. Let me see what the other language.
Exaggerated and twisted.
Exaggerated and twisted and made with the intention of harming our program and tarnish the reputation of our dedicated players and coaching staff. This is not how kids generally, an entire football team would put a statement out, but whatever. We firmly deny the validity of these accusations. I mean, again, red flags. They got everyone to sign it in like an hour too. That's always easy. Anyway, no details were offered there. So later, players on the team talked to ESPN and said the whistleblower was hell-bent on taking down Fitzgerald, blah, blah, blah. It is a mess. Was this barbaric? Was this exaggerated? Is Fitzgerald the worst guy? Is he not anything? Should he have known? Did he know? What? Blah, 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 blah. This is what happens when you don't release the report and get out in front of this. We now have a full-blown scandal that is only getting bigger. And will probably lead to another investigation. And quite honestly, whether I don't know, I don't have a determination here at this moment, but it could very well end Pat Fitzgerald's career and the president's. Good work. Good work. Maybe they both deserve it. Maybe they don't. I don't know. But this was terribly handled. So we have this situation. That's where we're at right now. Pat, your thoughts before we get deeper into some of the things. I hope I laid it out for most of the people who didn't pay attention.
Yeah, it was. This was, and we see it so often in college sports, an attempt at damage control that largely counts on concealing information from the public. And it wasn't going to work to begin with. And they thought it would for some reason. They thought that nobody was ever going to talk about the details of what this was about. If you had a whistleblower, you think he's going to sit there and say, oh, well, 2 weeks for Fitz and no specifics of anything? Yeah, that's fine. Sure. Come on. So incredible miscalculation there. And last week was a banner week in sports, by the way, for news dumps. July 3rd at 4:30, Churchill Downs announced they were banning Bob Baffert for another year from the Kentucky Derby. July 3rd at 6 o'clock, Alabama announces they're hiring Preston Murphy as a basketball assistant after a two-year show cause. And then we get Northwestern on Friday. It sounds good in the PR meeting, but everybody sees through the strategy here, folks. We all get it. We all know what you're doing. So, you know,
the guy worked there 17 years and we now suspend him the day before a weekend during a week that almost everyone's on vacation because it's July 4th. Yeah. No, yeah. Pat Fitzgerald suspended. What?
Nobody's going to care about that. So, I mean, yes, the management of this, terrible. Release the report. And this is one of those cases. Rip the Band-Aid off. It may be a damaging report. It may be bad. Get it out there. Get it out there and say, look, we hired these people to investigate, and these are their findings. And this is our response to their findings. The inability to confront these things head on just is so damaging, it seems like. And then, so Daily Northwestern does a great job. Fantastic job in the middle of the summer on a weekend. They get this story out there. And then, here comes the wagon circling. And the entire team suddenly came together. According to the Sun-Times, the letter from the quote-unquote entire team came to them via a text from a former Fitzgerald staffer. So that doesn't seem really like, that ain't the team captain, that's not the senior class or whatever. So there's significant, I think, doubt about what constitutes the entire team. And then we have yet certainly to hear from Pat Fitzgerald on this, and Michael Schill walking everything back and now trying to regroup. And Schill's in a difficult spot. This is tricky. Now, part of that's of his own making. But also, Pat Fitzgerald has been woven into the fabric of Northwestern football for 30 years, probably more than any other person in history. He's their winningest coach in history. He's won two Big Ten West championships in the last 5 years. He was one of their best players ever, was a member of their best team ever that went to the Rose Bowl. So Michael Schill is now on one side, potentially looking at additional sanctions for Pat Fitzgerald, and a lot of Northwestern people who love Pat Fitzgerald are on the other. So good luck walking that one.
I don't understand how why schools and communications people and the PR agencies, crisis consultants, whoever these schools often work with, haven't learned that you should release everything, that it's almost certainly going to get out these days, and release it all, get ahead of it, right? Show remorse, contrition, whatever, do a press conference, answer hard questions, and get it out of the way. And it'll be a lot cleaner, a lot better, instead of it trickling out over the course of days or weeks. But here we are again. We're seeing it happen. We're seeing it happen again. For me, one of the most interesting things is Pat Fitzgerald's situation just going into this season. Before all this, right? Northwestern had dropped off the last couple of years, going 3-9 and 1-11 last year. And I think, Pat said, he's been, he's been the program for 30 years or so. It feels like certainly for 15 or so or 17, however long he's been coach. And so he could probably tell Northwestern when he would like to step aside before all this came about. But it was a pretty pivotal year, having won four games in the last two seasons. And now you have this lopped on top of there, which will, I'm sure, be hanging over the entire year. If Pat Fitzgerald remains as coach, it'll be kind of lingering throughout the season. And it just puts more pressure to to win and bounce back from the last two seasons. And this will linger, and you wonder what kind of impact it will have on the current players. People who know Pat Fitzgerald well, in our industry as media and also in the coaching industry, we'll praise him at every turn, right? Like, what kind of character he has and how he builds programs and how he runs a team and organization, what kind of boss he is. They'll praise him on every turn. So we haven't seen a whole lot of negative stuff come out on this man. And, now it'll be interesting to see how he will handle it through the season if he remains as coach and how it will impact things.
Yeah, well, he obviously is, he was star linebacker when Northwestern got good under Gary Barnett in the mid-90s. He was the got kid from the South Side suburbs, heart and soul, blood and guts linebacker, sort of the culture guy, the whole thing. And then as a coach, they've made Big Ten championship games. They have punched above their weight most of the time. He has also been extremely loyal to his university by not leaving. He could have coached Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. He could have coached Michigan. Yeah. I mean, we're talking big time jobs he could have had and said, I'm going to stay at Northwestern. He is a unbelievable fundraiser for the school. They have the nicest, let me put it this way. There is no football facility, at least in the Big Ten, if not the country, nicer than Northwestern's. And yep. I don't know if there's any with a better view. The thing overlooks Lake Michigan.
Yeah.
Okay. It's unbelievable, palatial. And they're about to tear down their stadium and build an $800 million stadium to take its place. That will, I think, be a major thing, because one of the major drawbacks of Northwestern, besides the academics, is the stadium is not impressive. And when they play, it's filled with the other team's fans. So they're going to make like a 35,000 seat stadium and try to make it so there's not 50, we have 55,000 people here and 30 of them are Buckeyes or Badgers or whatever. So there is all of that. I don't know what happened. This is why, let me explain real clear why Northwestern screwed this up. Okay, these types of allegations and what this guy said in the Daily Northwestern could be 100% accurate. I'm not saying it isn't, but I don't know. But these things are generally very complex, and one person's joke or one person's non-issue is someone else's. And I'm not taking it one way or the other, but perspective is the only way to handle this, because I'll read some of the allegations and they seem really bizarre. And so maybe it's like, well, this is just something stupid that, look, it's a bunch of guys do really stupid things especially when they're alone on a camp. Like, we'll invent dumbass things. And so when does dumbass go to barbaric or unfair or wrong, right? That's the fine line. I guarantee you the Northwestern football team didn't wake up every morning and say, hey, let's sexually harass everybody on the team. That doesn't mean they didn't do it. Right. It just means this is not what they were setting out to do. It doesn't clear them, but what you want on these, if you read this report, it's largely supported and there's different perspectives on it. If you release the whole report, then you can read and say, hey, this is interesting. Well, I get what they're saying. Maybe this allegation, it sounds bad. It's still not great, but it's not quite as bad as it would sound without, hey, I saw that. It wasn't quite like that, right? This is like allowing the prosecution to make a case and the defense is saying, we rest, we don't have any witnesses, we're not going to cross-examine anyone, we'll just say whatever you want. So when you pretend this the details of the allegations aren't going to come out, that's like the defense saying, we're not going to cross-examine anyone, make an open statement or anything. We're just going to say, oh, yeah. The details came out now anonymously in a student newspaper. And the school has no ability to provide perspective or defend itself. Fitzgerald has no way to do that. The football team has no way to do that. You allowed the whistleblower to tell his story without any check. Now, again, maybe this is 100% what happened, or maybe it's like 80% of what happened, or maybe this guy had an interesting point when he saw it. I don't know. That's why you have a law firm interview 50 freaking people and you go, look, this is what we found. Instead, you let the guy make statements. And again, this is just crisis management where you're calling it a shocking experience, barbaric culture, really abrasive. And then that story gets aggregated and those are the headlines. That is a unbelievable failure by Northwestern to allow that to happen. And it was predictable that it would happen.
Sure.
That's why you released a report, because you can at least say, okay, he said this happened, but someone else said, well, it wasn't quite as bad, or that didn't happen, or yeah, right. Instead, you allow the complainant, if you're just Northwestern trying to do damage control, you allow the complainant to just hand them the mic. And so that's where Northwestern should be like, we just nuked our football program, whether something did or didn't happen. Now, if all this stuff happened, yeah, you know, maybe Fitzgerald needs to go. I don't know. Did he know? There's always the should he have known. Can you run a football team for 17 years and all this stuff happens and never heard a word? Right. Nobody on your staff ever heard a word? Mm-hmm. Not good. Does that mean you fire the guy? Or is it like, look, you're otherwise doing a great job, we're going to suspend? I don't know. We don't know what happened here. But the way Northwestern handled this made it so much worse and is going to make it so much harder for the program to continue and Fitzgerald to continue. And very well, the mismanagement of the way this story goes may literally cost Fitzgerald his job. I don't know. And it may cost the president his job. Like, this is just, again, whoever you guys hired, and you had to hire somebody, they screwed you every single way you could possibly get screwed. This was the worst advice you possibly could have. So any thoughts on that before I get into these details? Because it's, these things are bizarre.
Yeah, no, smart school made a dumb choice. And especially you got like all these really intelligent Northwestern alums too. Who's advising you on this as a strategy? Yeah. Anyway, yeah, no, go ahead and get to the gory
details. That's my first thought on how bad, because I think when we get into this, you start going, okay, maybe, maybe not. I don't know what the hell this is. Okay.
Who's advising you? So how much were you paying them?
Oh, yeah, these guys
usually
come in and
hundreds of thousands of dollars.
They rip these schools off. I mean, they put a ski mask on when they came in for this meeting. Hey, here's what you do. Don't release it. Let's anger the complainant. I'm sure he won't tell anybody. 2 seconds later, like, oh, well, actually, he just left the school and his roommate happened to work at the newspaper. Mm-hmm. I mean, the kid down the hall. I mean, come on. Jeez, do we have a good journalism program here? I don't know. Oh, my God.
They're not going to look into this at all.
Again, like this is bad. What happened is bad, and I'm going to get to that. I don't want, but just in terms of how you handle the crisis, good Lord, Northwestern. Good Lord. Everything is worse because of how they handled it. And so, and again, like Michael Schill, imagine running your whole career. You get, if you're a president of a university, you want to be a university president, and a whole lot of places you want to be president more than Northwestern.
For sure. Came from Oregon, where they had budget issues. I mean, Oregon's a fine school, but yeah, from the academic ladder, going to Northwestern as president, say big, big deal. And he may have nuked it in a year.
Yeah, nuked it on something he didn't even do.
Right.
Like, he can't blame him for the culture of the locker room, right? This isn't one of those things. So, like, geez, the president should have known. Well, I just got here, man. All right. Hazing stories. I as much as I understand the mentality of just dudes and how stupid we are and the stupid things we think are funny, these stories always come out and I'm always like, what in the world? Okay. So did this happen? Again, there seems to be some level of it happened. Former player alleges the team's hazing centered around a practice dubbed running, which was used to punish team members, primarily freshmen, for mistakes made on the field and in practice. If a player was selected for, quote, running, the player who spoke to Daly said, They would be restrained by a group of 8 to 10 upperclassmen dressed in purge-like masks. Those are like scary, scary masks. I don't even know how to describe them, but just Halloween kind of, I don't know. Try to do as general if you don't know what purge mask is.
Yeah, whatever.
So they
everybody
wore masks.
Has seen a version of that. You know, usually it's some Halloween party or bad movie.
Yeah, or like, yeah, one of the horror movie masks. Right? Yeah. So they brought props. Okay. 8 to 10 by a group of 8 to 10 upperclassmen dressed in various purge-like masks who would then begin dry humping the victim in a dark locker room. What?
Not great.
It's a shocking experience as a freshman. Yeah, I would think so. Okay.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Mm-hmm. Shocking is one way to put it.
It would often occur during Thanksgiving for whatever, and there was a whiteboard in the office, in the locker room that had the term Runsgiving. So they'd run them on Thanksgiving. And Shrek's
Happy
list,
Holidays.
Which contained a list of the names indicating the player needed to be ran. The tradition was common around Thanksgiving and Christmas, called Runsgiving or Runsmas. It was done under the smoke and mirror of, oh, this is team bonding, but no, this is sexual abuse, the player said. Again, so why you release the full report. To him, it's sexual abuse, and it sounds really weird, and I don't want to try to parse that up. But there's no, like, the school, however, found that 6 kids said it was no big deal, right? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
According to the players, there's this whole, the Shrek clap, blah, 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 you go on. And they're claiming that Fitzgerald would make these signals of, if a guy screwed up, he'd do this Shrek clap, and it would encourage the hazing. I don't know. Everyone would be looking at each other like, bro, Fitz knows about this, because you wouldn't take that action otherwise. Everyone joins in because he's the head coach. A second player said he also witnessed these actions occurring. Again, a little, you know, whatever. But the law firms said that the current and former players had varied on their perspective, but it was largely supportive of evidence. Okay. So then we get into more things. In addition to running, the whistleblower alleged he witnessed the team participate in other hazing traditions in which freshmen were forced to strip naked and perform various acts, including bear crawling and slingshotting themselves across the floor with exercise bands. What?
Where do they come up with this stuff?
Why naked? Why is everyone naked?
I have thoughts on that, but go ahead.
Okay. In a once a year, quote, tradition dubbed the car wash, the first player said that some players would stand naked at the entrance to the showers and spin around, forcing those entering the showers to basically rub up against a bare naked man. Upon entering the showers, the player alleged set up a hose that connected to a shower to spray people. It was extremely painful, the player said. The player also alleged he witnessed and was forced to participate in what he called a naked center quarterback exchange. Forced to participate. So he's probably outing himself as either the quarterback or the center, I guess. Wherein a freshman a quarterback was forced to take an under center snap from a freshman center while both players were naked. Again, what? They forced to do that. There was also something called the Gatorade Shake Challenge, where teammates, often freshmen, forced to drink as many Gatorade shakes as they could in a 10-minute period. I find that to be wholly believable. That's exactly something. I don't know about this naked stuff, but the player alleges that he has witnessed the practice on 2 occasions, and he's never not seen anyone throw up. So they, you know, it goes on from there. There's a few other things, but those are the big ones. Pat, you said you had thoughts. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you had a good entryway into this when you basically said there's a slippery slope from dumbass to, like, really harmful and actually aberrant sort of behavior. And young adult males tend to be on that slippery slope. It's a place I think a lot of us probably lived in college or high school or even after that. And certainly in a team setting, you get some sort of bizarre kind of like
bad decision.
Ritualization of things, yeah, that leads to people thinking these are good ideas, and then it becomes this it's a bonding thing. It's a tradition, and we got to keep doing it. It's like, oh, maybe this is actually a terrible idea. Again, not saying, you know, can't say with exact certainty this is exactly what happened and how it happened and why, but if this is the case, I think we understand that where some of these incredibly bad ideas spring from, and then how it can really kind of get out of control and get to a point where, especially, again, it's 2022, 2023. It's not the 1980s. It's not the 1990s. You can't do the same stuff and expect to say, oh, it's just team bonding. That it doesn't work. That's not the case. So as far as everybody being naked and stuff like that, look, again, and this goes back to the age thing. I don't want to get overly, like, psychoanalytical here. Guys have a hard time with sexuality in general at that age, all right? Yeah. And so it's like, you know, whether it's understanding, dealing with homosexuality without turning it into some weird, awkward joke thing, or whether it's just the idea of a bunch of guys being in close proximity like that. And I know Camp Kenosha was a big thing for Northwestern for a long time. Gary Burnett started that 30-some years ago. That was their place. They'd go, get away, they'd bond. They said it was really important in terms of becoming a team. But also you get guys that go away and you leave campus and you leave oversight, and strange ideas begin to take hold as far as what we're going to do with our time when we're together 24 hours a day. And so you get some of this stuff. Again, not excusing it, not condoning it, but you can kind of understand where some of this may come from and where it may end up going as far as Northwestern in trouble.
Yeah, and, like, you know, obviously determining what happens to Pat Fitzgerald involves answering a few questions about his knowledge of it. You know, like, first off, did he know? And it sounds like from a lot of what these former players, a couple of the former players have said, is that he signaled some of this. And I think ESPN even had a story about a whiteboard in the locker room, right, that had the list of those who need to be punished or involved in runs giving. So it seems that he knew. Usually coaches aren't orchestrating these things or leading them in any way. But the fact that there was, you know, this has been going on for so long, it was such a big part of the team. It's hard to think that there wasn't some knowledge on the coaching staff of this. And you'd imagine if they knew the details, the naked stuff, the dry humping, all of that, that should have been put to an end. And like Pat said, this isn't, you know, 1988 or even 2004. You can't do some things that right, maybe used to be done. Every time a story like this pops up, I always think the first thing that comes to my head is, how many schools, how many teams are doing this right now, are doing something similar and haven't been uncovered? And how many of those teams will now stop doing these things? And I'm guessing all coaches and administrators and players too should take notice of this.
Well, I'm guessing in every college, and should be high school and anything else, this story comes out. I don't care if you're Nick Saban to, you know, the lowest high school coach in the country, you're going, hey, is that what are we doing?
Right.
Right. The word, once you get naked, it becomes like, otherwise, like, I don't know. I mean, hey, freshman, drink as many Gatorades as you can in 10 minutes.
Right.
Okay.
Not uncommon, that sort of thing.
Not great. Probably shouldn't do that, but, like, I don't know. Like, you get it, right? Do we fire the football coach over that? No. I mean, whatever.
No.
Right? And every, like, freshman carry the pads. Freshman got to go pick up the footballs, whatever. There's certain things, right? But, again, this isn't 1988, and it shouldn't be. It shouldn't. Right. Wasn't right in 1988.
Right.
Right? You should never have to get naked if you don't want to be naked. You shouldn't have to do these stupid things. But so I don't know. I want to hear more from the players opposed to this, just, you know, again, that statement. You can't get 100 people to agree on the wording of a statement in 3 hours. not that long. Try it. I mean, like, send out an email to you around your office and be like, you can't get 100 people to agree that, like, it's Monday, you know, right? It's our one thing that everyone agrees on. Fentanyl is bad. That's about it. Maybe you can get everyone to do that. Anything else is going to be. Anyway, so I don't know what happened. Should Fitz have known? Probably.
Yeah.
But did it go from, look, we had this stupid thing where the freshman quarterback had like the naked snap, to all of a sudden it got worse this one year, right? Like, did this happen the year before? What? I don't know. That's what the report should do. And that's what you should have Fitzgerald out there talking, saying, look, man, this Pat Fitzgerald is a great communicator. He should be like, this didn't happen in my program ever again. I don't want this. This is ridiculous. You know, we're going to handle it. We're going to go through it. Instead, it's just so much worse because of the way it was handled. So I don't know what's going to happen. Was this player out to get coach? What? There's so many more details to know. I don't know what happened. These allegations are ridiculous. They're inappropriate. I feel bad for any player that had to go through that. Should be able to go take a shower without going through whatever this car wash thing is. Bizarro, but I don't know. It's one side of the story right now. And I don't know if Northwestern will ever be able to get back out ahead of this story because they blew their chance. And it's like, the big thing is like, well, what were you scared of that's in the report? Right. Let me guarantee one thing. There will be another investigation.
Yeah.
Somebody else, another law firm in Chicago, is about to have a tremendous summer of billable hours.
That's right.
Re-interviewing the first 50 because Northwestern's crisis management. There'll be a new crisis management team, too.
Yeah.
For enough money, you can hire us. Believe me.
Yeah.
We don't have to podcast anymore.
That's right. How much is in your endowment, Northwestern?
We're at your service. Take care.
Everything's negotiable here, folks.
That's right. That's right.
All right. Anything else on this?
Yeah. Just real quick, though.
Yeah.
All right. Let's say this ends badly for Fitz. He gets fired, but not catastrophically to the point that where it comes out that where like he was personally ordering up sexual abuse or anything like that of player on player. But it just ends up, hey, Pat Fitzgerald should have known more, should have contained this more, should have addressed it and dealt with it. You're out. How long is he unemployed? Because I think not very long. I think this is in college sports.
One year.
And November. What we get is, we get fire for Fitz in September at, you know, West Virginia or whoever else is trying to move on a coach. I think he immediately moves to the front of the top candidate line, provided, again, that this is something that not can be excused, but you can at least move past from a college athletic standpoint where, you know, Hugh Freeze, Rick Pitino, Chris Beard, et cetera, can keep getting jobs. So can Pat Fitzgerald.
I would think quickly. I'm with Ross. I mean, first off, you would just say if it does not get worse, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, look, man, I should know more because this is easily fixed. You say, look, on my next job, this isn't happening.
Right.
My first statement to the team is we're not doing anything. The freshmen don't even have to carry your shoulder pads.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
You'll carry the freshman shoulder pads. Like, we're going to change the whole thing. Mm-hmm. This is fixable, and this guy's going to get a job somewhere else. I don't know. But again, what does Northwestern do? The boosters are not on Shill's side. They're on his side. They got an $800 million football facility to fund.
Right. This is a tough deal. Pat Fitzgerald is Northwestern football.
But 4 wins in 2 seasons, this equation changes dramatically if it was 2 years ago and they're coming off a Big Ten championship game appearance.
True.
So, true. I don't know. Very interesting times. But I do not think Pat Fitzgerald is going to be, unless there are far worse details coming.
Yeah.
Or there's some email that's going to come out that says, hey, I heard the guys were doing the car wash. Make sure they get, you know, number 56.
Yeah.
He blew his assignment today. Now, that'd be different, but, presumably that's not out there. If that is, then yeah. But otherwise, I don't know. Very, very, just a tough situation. Unfortunate for the kids that had to go through it. because you should be able to just play college football and not have to deal with this, you know, drink your Gatorades. Yeah. I don't know. Someone will tell me you shouldn't even have to be forced to drink Gatorades, and you're right. But again, if you're a player and you happen to listen to this and you're doing any hazing and naked comes up, just don't.
Yeah. Change the plan.
Yeah.
Delete naked from
the only thing you should,
indoctrination of the freshman plan.
Shower naked. Other than that, nothing else. Nothing else. Naked should not be on the thing. All right. Huggins. Thought he... On the list of stories I never saw, I'm rarely surprised. Word breaks, Metro News out of West Virginia. Hoppy Kercheval hosts the show Talk Line. It's a big show. They don't have a lot of media in West Virginia. Metro News and the Talk Line is one of the big things in West Virginia, as you'd imagine. Very rural state. Reports that Huggins actually claiming he never resigned. He sends a letter to his lawyer, sends a letter to WVU president Gordon Gee, who we know has been around. He's seen a few things, never this one. Just to recap, we know Huggins was, you know, had a DUI situation up in Pittsburgh. According to the police report, thought he was in Ohio. That's how drunk he was. Terrible. This comes after the ridiculous, insensitive, and just disappointing and hateful radio interview he did in Cincinnati. You know, it was time for Bob to go. I've been the biggest Bob Huggins fan and apologist you can be. Not anymore. What are you going to do? But he then sends this letter after he resigns, apparently, and they promote within, get a new coach, go through this whole thing, interview people. Out of nowhere, Huggins' attorney says, based on press statements, it appears that WVU is taking the position that Coach Huggins voluntarily resigned and terminated his employment agreement in advance of April 30, 2024. They redid the employment agreement after the radio interview. Gets complicated. However, although the press statements purport to have resignation communications directly from Coach Huggins to you and or athletic director, Coach Huggins has never communicated his resignation to you, the athletic director, or anyone at WVU. To the contrary, we understand the purported resignation, that's in quotes, is incredibly based on a text message from Coach Huggins' wife. Now, Metro News later publishes what looks like an email, not a text message, but it's sent from the iPhone, from June Huggins on June 17th at 8:38 p.m. Please accept this correspondence as my formal notice of resignation as WV head basketball coach and as notice of my retirement from West Virginia University, effective immediately. So it was his wife who resigned him. And now Huggs is saying, not so fast.
Yeah, is this a I don't know her situation?
Who? Her?
My wife? Who?
I've been married 50 years, but I mean, who?
June and I were mad at each other for a while there. We weren't talking. She resigned me, and then
he's like, your wife just like, yeah, I'm so mad at you. I'm resigning you. Okay, so I don't know where legally that, I mean, it was pretty clear, right? Sent from June Huggins. So WVU responds. There's a lot of like details I have to explain. I hate talking for this long, but this is okay. This is the most West Virginia fight I've ever seen in my life. What is clear, this is the WVU letter back. What is clear is that on the evening of June 17, 2023, Mr. Huggins met with members of the basketball staff and the student athletes to announce he would no longer be coaching the team. He had a meeting, told them he's done. The same evening at 9:38 p.m., following a series of written verbal communications with Mr. Gianola, who was acting as his counsel, Mr. Huggins clearly communicated his resignation and retirement of the university via email, not text messages. This is the email from June Huggins. He also, a statement was posted on the WVU website 26 hours after the arrest, Mountaineer Nation. This is attributed to Bob Huggins. Today, I've submitted a letter to President Gordon Gee and Athletic Director Ren Baker, informing them my resignation and intention to retire as the head men's basketball coach. Go on, effective immediately. And he goes on, and it's a good statement, but whatever. So, apparently, he's getting treatment, which is good, and we encourage. But he's saying that completion of his treatment, he wants his job back. Now, there's probably a legal argument where you say this is a medical condition. I don't quite know all the facts, but if you say I'm an alcoholic, it's a medical condition. I get treatment. You can't fire me for being an alcoholic. Same way you couldn't fire somebody if they got cancer or broke their leg or whatever, right? I don't know. So you get your job back, but he also was arrested. Now they're saying they're going to settle the charges, and I don't know. Anyway, that's where we're at. Again, Pat, got anything on this one?
Well, I mean, Bob Huggins has really quickly gone from likable to just go away territory. You know, like he's burned bridges. He's expended every bit of capital he had. He has thrown away a lot of goodwill with people in West Virginia who love him. And he's just made a bad situation all the worse, I think, with this. And if this is all just a legal connivance to try to get a settlement, then that's kind of gross. You know, it just feels really tacky. And cheap, and he's 69 years old and has made a lot of money for a long time. And if that's what he's doing, and if that's not what he's doing, then it feels like an abuse of power. Like, look, dude, you screwed up. You screwed up badly. You screwed up badly enough to be fired at least once, if not twice. They very well could have fired him after the radio show, kept him, and then he did what he did with the DUI, which was dangerous. Okay. You can have an alcohol problem and get treatment for that, but that doesn't excuse you from, I mean, if you have a criminally negligent episode with a car, like, what's the university supposed to say? It's okay, you know, he was working through some things. No, you get fired, man, and I'm sorry now to come back with this. Just really is off-putting in the extreme, I think, for somebody whose reputation has taken a very bad turn in my mind in the last 2 months.
Yeah, how many strikes did he think he had here? I mean, he you said, I mean, many coaches probably would have been fired for the statements that he made on the radio. And he's gotten off with some things in the past, too. There's some other things that have obviously bubbled up. And so what would have made this story even better is if instead of sending a letter, Bob Huggins really did carry out the Seinfeld episode and just showed up at a team meeting and just walked in and sat down and, all right, boys, let's get going. And I could just see the AD Ren Baker walking into the meeting. Is that Huggins over there? Did you quit or what? Oh, that? No, I didn't quit. Are you kidding me? You took that seriously? But this is bizarre. Bob Huggins is a former West Virginia player. I think he was born and raised in Morgantown.
Raised in Ohio. But small town. Ohio.
Born in Morgantown, raised in Ohio.
That same but Appalachian, yeah, yeah, Eastern Ohio thing.
Deep rooted connection to the program. Been coached for 16, 17 years. All of this is just not just damaging his legacy, but hurting the program that he probably loves and is connected to for so many years. It's dragging this out, and it just can't be good for the program in general. It's kind of sad to see. And I'll ask the question, obviously he's not going to be rehired at West Virginia, but I'll ask the question of Pat mentioned Pat Fitzgerald and how long he would be unemployed. You know, I know he's 69, Bob Huggins. He's a little older than Pat Fitzgerald, but I do wonder if Bob Huggins, the fact that he's carrying out all of this tells me he does want to continue to coach. I wonder if someone picks him up, if he gets clean in some way.
I probably before this, he probably would have had a chance. Not a major program. Mm-hmm. But like, okay, Larry Stacy had an alcohol problem. He came back and coached Southern Miss and Colorado State and Southern Miss. Was he there? I can't remember. Whatever. You can come back. I mean, look, alcoholism, if you can treat it, then yeah, you know, come back. Absolutely. That's what we all want. If Bob's an alcoholic and he can treat that, great. Or, you know, coach somewhere else. This looks like a money. I texted with a number of his people in his kind of coaching tree over the week. Like, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's just like, he was making $4.2 million a year. He's been making over $1 million for 30 years. He's 69. And yeah, you always want more money, but you made a lot of money. You got more money than you need. Support the program. Go out the right way. Work on yourself. This is just like, what in the world is this? Like, I mean, they're not going to rehire him. So it's like, well, now you have to fire me so I get X million dollars. Like, you know, his daughter wrote a social media post, and we didn't touch on it because, I don't know, kids are going to defend their parents and all that. But she had sent this thing out that was very, and it did not echo what Bob was saying publicly in his statement, which was very generous and very appropriate, right? I made mistakes and very accountable. But she talked about how disloyal West Virginia was and all this stuff, and he never should have been fired and blah, blah, blah. And it was like, oh my goodness. But you go, all right, look, daughter loves her dad. That's fine. But I don't know, maybe that's the sentiment. And it's just unfortunate because this will not be good for West Virginia. They need everybody pulling in the same direction. They need all, like, he, much like Fitzgerald, Bob is very, very close with many, many boosters. You just don't need that division. So it's just all around unfortunate. I don't know what the heck he was thinking with this.
Yeah.
But my wife sent the email, not me. It's not really
I don't know her. Who resigned?
Oh. And again, like, if you didn't resign at some point in the last month, you would have said, wait a minute. Like, when they put out that statement, you would have been, like, someone puts out a statement saying, I resigned. I'd be like, no, I did not. What?
Right.
This is news to me.
All reeks of illegal strong-arming or gambit or whatever. And, yeah, his daughter also in the statement said that Bob is not an alcoholic. So if now he's coming back and saying he is an alcoholic and getting treatment, they at least should get the family aligned on that front.
Yeah, I don't know. Not good. All right, a little bit of football recruiting that came up over the weekend. That's of interest. Arizona landed five-star edge rusher Elijah Rushing, who is from Sal Point Catholic in Tucson. So the hometown kid. This is the same high school as Bijan Robinson. A lot of great players from Sal Point Catholic. They held off everybody in the country for this guy. I think in the end it was like Oregon, Notre Dame, and stayed home to Jed Fish and the Arizona program. Huge get. You know, you need these elite players. And as a sport, you want these, you don't need every elite player just clustering at the same thing. A very good situation for Arizona as a state just gets pillaged by everybody around the country. Texas, Oklahoma, Ohio State crushes down there.
Georgia's gone in. I mean, got Keely Ringo.
Everybody is crushes it down there. Rayola's going to, he's now moved to Georgia, but whatever. So huge get. And then right after that, Damond Williams, who's an excellent quarterback prospect, decommitted from Ole Miss. He's from Chandler, Arizona. He decommitted from Ole Miss and is now considered an Arizona lead. So it'd be a very big week in recruiting for Arizona that's trying to make a little bit of noise. Ross?
Yeah. You know, we've talked about, I think a few times we talked about Jed Fish on the show. You know, he's as personable and outgoing. Like when you talk to Jed, you kind of know why he has been a successful coach and why he is a successful recruiter, because he is. He's one of the most talkative, kind of personable guys, and I'm not super surprised that he, as quickly as he has turned around Arizona. I think when he took over, well, at some point in his first year at Arizona, they had lost, I think, 20 straight games. Guys, do you remember, like, 18 straight games? It was some kind of awful losing skid.
Yeah, they were brutal. They were really, yeah, really bad.
And then, you know, he turned around last year and won 5 games. I've talked quite a bit with Jed over the last couple of years about NIL. You know, they have they have a school president at Arizona, Bobby Robbins, who's pretty involved in athletics, big sports fan. Actually hosted, I think we talked about it on the show, right? He hosted a summit on kind of NIL here in DC, and Jed Fish was here, spoke at the summit. I think he was like the only coach who came, and he spoke at the summit. It was on a panel and offered some good feedback. So they're well aware of the changing environment and the evolution of college athletics. And yeah, he's got them going good there. I was looking at the team rankings right now. They're still far behind. But if they land this other 5-star that Dan was talking about, I'm sure they'll vault up the rankings. Well,
he's a 4-star. He's four a 4-star, star, but he's a good guy. Yeah. Arizona and Arizona State need to start controlling their thing. And so with Kenny Dillingham and Jed Fish, maybe that gets going, you know?
Yeah, he's got it
there's
going
a lot
too.
Of good
yeah.
players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So there's
yeah,
a lot of good players in Arizona.
Right.
And if either of these two schools or both of them start keeping some of them, at least you got a chance.
Yeah. 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 And yeah, like I mean, from the weather to the, just to the all overall experience, I think, especially at Arizona State, right. It's out of Phoenix. I don't know why they're not better. You know, I don't know why they haven't been better.
No one's ever understood that. Yeah, no one's ever understood.
Ross, what are you alluding to in terms of the overall experience?
Nothing. No, just you know, just the environment and the weather and in the what is it? I think Arizona State is the they had the reigning they were the reigning champion for a while, for years in a row, for the number one party school. You know, so I'll just leave it at that, Pat.
There you go. That's a good place to leave it. Yeah, no, I mean, according to like Rivals, Arizona's working on a third straight top 40 class. And well, top 40 isn't going to get you in the playoff or anything. It's an improvement over where they had been. And I mean, Jed Fish came in with a recruiter reputation. He's living up to it. Now you just got to get these guys to signing day and keep going.
All right. I got to do this story because everybody, you know, I hyped up this coming All-America, this Ames Lager.
Yes.
The Iowa State people are brewing and this whole lake up the Great Lakes and the parties they got going. And I've got
Okoboji. We're going.
Yeah, Okoboji. Right? Total mayhem up there.
Yeah, we're
total
going.
Mayhem. These Iowans. They took a break from caucusing. They took a break from like attending, sitting on a bale of hay, listening to some obscure presidential candidate.
Like, or eating loose meat sandwiches.
I see these pictures of these guys like, oh, there's this guy polling at 1%. I think I'll go down the ag hall and listen to this guy. Like, what? I'm glad some of you people have the sense to just go to the lake and get hammered.
They care about the democratic process, Dan.
It's like, why would you? That guy doesn't stand a chance. Anyway, good for you. Someone's got to do it. It ain't going to be me. I can tell you that. I could have a presidential candidate in my backyard, and I'd be like, please leave. Anyway, Iowa State's building their collective off of beer, which apparently many other schools are doing also. But the Iowa fans are very angry at me because I did not mention the Swarm Collective has a Swarm Golden Ale.
Oh, okay.
Exile Brewing Company is brewing. 20% of all revenue will go to the Swarm Collective. And a tremendous piece of a great company statement. Exile Brewing Company co-founder RJ Tursey said, how much money will go to how much can they help the Iowa athletes? All depends on how much Hawkeye fans get behind the beer. You know, it all depends on Hawkeye Nation, really. Get drunk, Hawkeyes. Don't let the Cyclones do. I mean, this is just, they're just gonna be all alcoholics out there.
Get everyone drunk on our beer, our Iowa beer.
Not honey, Iowa it's State Tuesday beer. Night. Do you have to you have to crush a 12er? Dude, it's for the Cyclones.
There's all there's beer, a, five beer. Remember
five, yeah, guy, that guy. Yeah. Get that guy back. Five beer.
That guy. Yeah.
Six beer. There's a 3-star linebacker in Mason City. Whoever drinks more beer gets them. I mean, like, what are we doing?
That's the ultimate State of Iowa recruiting battle. Whoever drinks more beer gets them.
What a sport. Consider the topics we discussed on this podcast. My God, it's July.
College sports, what a baby. Always delivers.
All right, so get after it, Hawkeyes. I've mentioned your Swarm Collective. Now leave me alone.
Send us some of your beer. We'll taste test it.
Yeah, well, yeah, nothing's showing up at my house. All right, yeah. And finally, I know we're running a little long. So we're going to figure out what bar we're going to be at in Nashville next Monday.
Right. Yep. Stay tuned.
We haven't done. Ross was supposed to work on this, but he apparently is not yet. But we're going to figure it out. Stay tuned.
One more week of unemployment, at least.
Also on Sunday, if you happen to be in Detroit, come on by in Eastern Market, the Detroit Book Festival. I'll be signing epic athletes. You can buy epic athletes for me, or you can just come and hang out. You can hang out. Detroit Book Festival at the Eastern Market in Detroit. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure how many we're going to sell, so I may have some downtime. May have some downtime.
If the Wetzel table gets slow, come by and bring Hawkeye Swarm Golden Lager.
I got to drive home, so I cannot drink at the thing, but I will just, you can come by and say hello. You can get drunk at my table. Anyway, final story here. Comes out of Florida, Crime and Punishment. The Smoking Gun, well-written story. The Big Gulp was on, you know, the famed Big Gulp. We've all had one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. They really pioneered the idea of needing, like, 44 ounces of Coke.
Yes, like, they did.
Like, right. When I was a kid, you just got you just had a reasonable serving. Now, yeah, the Big Gulp, it just gets bigger, too. I think there's a Super Big Gulp, isn't there? It's even a bigger
Gulp. Yeah, I mean, you can get like at least 44 ounces, or you can just buy one of those like tanker cups, you know, with a handle. Which I don't know, hold like a gallon or something.
All right. Well, the Big Gulp was on the other foot Sunday night in Florida, where a 7-Eleven worker was arrested for striking a female customer in the head with a large cup of lemonade. Assault by Big Gulp. Busted for Big Gulp battery, the headline reads.
Oh, gosh.
Cops allege that clerk Miles Taz Jenkins, 35, got frustrated with a customer over payment and threw a Big Gulp filled with lemonade at the woman. Mm. The incident was witnessed by 3 other customers, according to the criminal complaint. And they made spontaneous, he and Jenkins reportedly made spontaneous statements admitting striking. Not a ton of details in this doc, some
there
kind
are worse
of payment
things
situation
to have thrown at your head, right?
So, here's I don't know. Mr. Jenkins may be guilty of this, and if so, he should be punished accordingly. But the 7-Eleven line can get very frustrating with the payments. Right? I mean, they get up there, trying to make their change, they're trying to get all the money out of the leave a penny, take a penny. It's like leave a penny, not 17 pennies. Take a like they want to buy a lottery ticket, you know.
I need a pack of Marlboros.
The blue. Oh geez. Oh, come on, man. Then they want their taquito heated up, the whole thing.
They want their taquito.
Yeah, the little roller. It's like it's been sitting there since 8 a.m. It's kind of,
If you actually carbon dated the taquito, it's from like a month ago.
Now, this Mr. Jenkins could be completely guilty here, but could there be a scenario, Pat, where it is justified to huck a big gulp of lemonade at someone's head?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. If you look, I've wanted to huck many things at people's heads who are slow in line like that. If you're not getting it together, the problem, like you get lemonade in the hair and that's an issue. You know, yeah, I mean, there you have just compounded the problems for the person you have assaulted to the point that they're really going to be ticked off. You don't want to give them lemonade head, and have them try to comb that out or wash that out or whatever. But yeah, there are so many things that can make standing in line in a convenience store a miserable experience that if I were the worker and I'm trying to move the line quickly, I would be tempted. Don't give me a big gulp because I'd probably throw it myself. Dismissed. Case dismissed.
There are plenty of reasons for frustration in the line of any grocery or any store at all. But there, as I said earlier, there are worse things, right, that could have happened or could have been thrown at your head. You know, in a convenience store, I can imagine, you know, there are quite a lot of times there are those giant Slim Jims, the big giant Slim Jims at the front of the register. And I can't imagine like beating somebody on the head with that. That would be much worse. So there are worse things that could have happened. You know, this person is probably lucky, you know, Slim Jim assault. So there are worse things, but, big gulp is, interesting. Pat said, I didn't think about, you know, this is why Pat's so great on the show. You know, he brings the analysis of the lemonade in your hair, the sticky lemonade sugar in your hair. That could be a problem. Yeah.
Everyone has a role.
Here's the situation. I don't think there is a unless you're under assault yourself, there's no reason to throw the lemonade. And here's why. Who's cleaning up the lemonade?
Good call.
He didn't think this thing through.
Yeah.
You huck the lemonade at the person to hurry up with the payment, or there's a dispute about the payment. That she isn't going to have to clean it up. You got to find that dirty ass mop in the corner out behind the ATM. It's always sitting there in that bucket that hasn't been used since like March.
Yeah. Yeah.
Behind the ATM. Dirty water. Water's like 6 months old.
Yeah. I mean, cleanliness and 7-Eleven are not often used at the same time. And now you're going to have to mop the thing up. And there's probably nowadays there's only one of you in there. So then the line's going to get longer. Just dumb behavior. You work at 7-Eleven, these are the customers. This is what you get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe they thought it was worth it. It was worth the cleanup, Dan.
Imagine how frustrated it got that he was like, I might get arrested and I'm certainly going to have to mop the floor. Yeah. I'm so angry with you, I'm going to huck a lemonade at your head. In the police report, it's got different little check. Were weapons seized? And it says no. So they didn't.
They did not seize the styrofoam. The styrofoam big gulp.
All right, this pod's gone on too long. We'll be back Wednesday. We appreciate everybody listening. Continue to subscribe, share us on social media, tell your friends about us. We appreciate you all, and we'll be back. I'm sure there's going to be more on the Northwestern affair as this goes forward, and who knows what else. So we will talk to you later.